for seat 3 for the Madison School Board. And I'm an optimist. I'm literally an optimist. I'm a past president of the Sauk Trails Optimist Club, which meets on the west side of Madison. I'm also an optimist about our school district. I think that we have a lot of potential here in this city to have an excellent school district. Unfortunately, I feel sometimes the priorities of the students aren't coming first. And so I feel that I bring a perspective to the school board that maybe isn't there. All right, definitely I feel isn't there. I'm very involved in the community like all the other candidates up here. I do a lot of volunteer work. I help in the schools. I help a junior optimist club at Memorial High School called the Spartan Youth Service Team that does service work in our community. Great bunch of kids, 150 kids. Each does a minimum of 20 hours of service per year. It's a great program. It shows that there's things that students can do. It really is inspirational for me. I've also been a business owner in town. I ran a dry cleaning plant for 12 years, and now I do small business consulting, and I do some real estate work. I help primarily first-time home buyers buy their first homes and realize a dream that they have. For so many people, it's great. I give back from my business also. I donate 5% of my commissions to educational charities. So, again, I'm an optimist. I think there's great things that can happen in our schools. My major issues with that I see that I want to promote if I get on the school board, and I'll just kind of go through a list here quickly since I only have about another 30 seconds probably. First, I want to promote safe schools with orderly classrooms. I do a lot of volunteer work. I see things happening in the schools, especially at the elementary level, and I think we're not serving our students very well. And at the high school level, too, we're allowing behaviors to occur at the schools that if they go and do these behaviors on a job, it's either going to get them fired or possibly put in jail. So, again, that's probably my number one priority. Secondly is the teaching of reading in our schools. Again, a lot of volunteer work at the elementary level. I see that about 23% of our students aren't reading at grade level, and that isn't acceptable to me. And thirdly, I want open and results-based decision-making done. I want to have a transparent school board, transparent administration. I want decisions made for what's best for the kids and not necessarily what's best for any particular special interest group. And I'll answer questions later.
I'll get it down.
Oh, that's fine.
Are we going to go down the line?
Yeah, we're just going to go right down the line. It'd be too complicated if I had to try and keep track of jumping around.
That's fine.
I'm Maya Cole. I ran for school board last year and lost by a Arlene probably would know how many votes. She's back there somewhere.
What seat are you running for?
Seat 5, which is being vacated by Ruth Robarts. I'm basically a reform candidate. I was a reform candidate last year, and I am this year. I'm someone that got involved in the schools when my kids were young. I volunteered from the preschool on to serving as president of Franklin and Randall Elementary School. I started a parent group there to get a parent in each room to help out teachers. And I want to say that every fall, the first thing I think about is the teacher that my kids are going to get. I'm very supportive of teachers and feel like the role of the board is not to represent teachers, but to actually support them. I think that one thing that we need to do as a school district is govern from a set of policies. And policies aren't very sexy to talk about, and they're very complicated, but it's something I study on a regular basis. And what that means is that I would like to go to the UW, where they have a strategic plan, and start building a strategic plan for our school district. We do have a very good foundation, but we have changing demographics. We have poverty in the schools that we haven't seen before. And we also have something that a lot of school districts have to deal with, which is high mobility, not just of people that are of low income, but also the high mobility that happens when middle school or middle-class parents find out that the schools aren't serving their kids' needs. We have some kids that and families that are moving outside of the district. So besides a strategic plan, what I would like to do is work on getting more professional development for the school board. And we done?
My name is Johnny Winston, Jr. I am the current president of the Madison School Board.
I've asked you to please go to my website at www.johnnywinstonjr.com to learn a little bit more about me.
What seat are you running
for? I'm running for seat number four.
Okay,
I'm the good-looking black man at your seat.
Oh, thank you.
One of the things I'm most proud about being on the school board is listening to the community. We had a school board meeting one time downstairs in room 103 when we didn't have the TV cameras on. Parent came in front of the board, was really upset. So the district didn't partner very well. And the parent's name was Sherry Edmond. She said, "You know, you guys just don't partner very well. You don't work with the community. We got this program called Wickedy, and you guys aren't doing anything about it." So I decided I'd do a little checking and find out about the Wisconsin Center for Academically Talented Youth. And called up Ellie Schott, said, "Ellie, I think we got some challenges in our district. We do need to partner. We need to be closer with you. I'd like to see more students of color involved in advanced placement courses and talented and gifted courses. Can you help us?" She said, "Yeah, we can help you." So draw up a plan. Superintendent said, "I don't know, Johnny, I don't know." I said, "No, we're going to do this." And we did. And so far, it's been successful. And I'd like to see us grow with those kind of ideas and grow those partnerships, because I think they're very important and they're vital to the community. If we want to see different things happen, then we got to do different things. And so I'm very proud about that partnership, and we'll continue to go. And I look forward to answering your questions this evening. Thank you.
My name is Beth Moss, and I'm running for seat three. And thank you very much for having us all here tonight to speak. I'm running for seat three. I am an advocate for our kids and for our schools. We moved here, like many other families that I've met during the campaign, so that we could send our kids to schools in a diverse community. And we also wanted our kids to go to schools in a district that valued educating all children. As a former classroom teacher, I have empathy for staff and for teachers. I have 2 7th graders at Jefferson Middle School. My son has autism, and my daughter is a typically developing girl, 13-year-old. And I bring that's a new perspective that has not been represented on the board for some time. I participated in school, district, community, and statewide efforts to improve education. Last fall, I was one of the co-chairs for Community and Schools Together, which worked successfully pass the school financing referendum. And that was a very exciting show of unity in our district. We won 70% of the vote, all districts except for one. So that was a really great victory. I've been a Schools of Hope tutor and also a classroom volunteer and a PTO volunteer. I supervise an education advocacy group called A Helping Hand for Autism. We're now in 2 middle schools and an elementary school. And AHFA, A Helping Hand for Autism, has been held up as a model of student empowerment and initiative throughout the state. We received 2 grants for AHFA, and I'm very proud of our efforts. The school board faces many issues. The budget is the most pressing. I will provide hardworking, strong leadership to help the district tackle these challenges. Public education represents our hopes for our future and for our children's futures, and it gives all children a chance to succeed and an opportunity to be contributing members of society. So I would very much appreciate.
You know, Beth, I even let people go out a little bit longer.
That won't come up until you go way over. But Johnny, you have 2 minutes in your blood. I can't.
Boy, heart of death.
Okay, I'm Marge Passman. I'm running for seat 5, the seat vacated by Ruth Robarts. I think everybody pretty well knows now. I've taught in the district for 28 years. I'm a teacher mentor for first-year teachers. I was the parent of 2 children who went to Leopold, Cherokee, and West. And I thought, tonight's the night I finally get to brag about my children. Okay, and here goes. My daughter was at West. She was the editor of the Regent Review. She won the National Council of Teachers of English Award and just about had access to any school she wanted to get into in her senior year. She went to Brown University, where she got a B in her freshman year, and 3 years later called up to tell us she had just made Phi Beta Kappa. She went on to Columbia University Graduate School. She majored in history and English, by the way, a dual major at Brown. Went on to Columbia University in a master's program and became an inner city social worker. And that may be, I'm proudest of the fact she gave me two incredible grandchildren, but that makes me the proudest of her of all. She is working with those children that need her, and I love her for doing that. My son was on the was co-chair of the West soccer team that went on to state and won state. Mm-hmm. And actually got into Northwestern because he played soccer and then promptly gave up soccer to major in fraternity life. This made my husband and I extremely proud. Can you sense the sarcasm there? Rallied around, eventually graduated, did well, and went on to Kellogg School of Business, and he's now an executive with General Electric. So you see, you can major in fraternity and still be an executive at General Electric. Maybe that's a prerequisite. I don't know. So I'm here to tell you today. I'm here to say I'm almost finished. But I got in my children. I got in my children. Every Jewish mother has to do that. So thank you for inviting me here, and I hope we'll get acquainted as the evening goes on.
I'm Tom Brew. Like Johnny, I'm running for seat four, and I'm a native Madisonian, born and raised here. Went to grade school right down the street at Longfellow, and high school at Central, and graduated from Madison Central. In high school, or junior high and high school, was involved in the advanced placement. They didn't call it TAG, but it was for the talented and gifted, except for English. Which I was about 4 years behind, so I never did catch up with the English. I'm running because I'm an independent candidate. I want to represent not only the students, the parents, the teachers, but also the community, the 70-plus percent of taxpayers that do not have children in the schools. And we need to reach out to them, to look at them, to see what they can offer the schools as they're nearing. A lot of them are retired folks, and let's get them more involved. I know they're involved somewhat, but let's see if we can get them more involved. I'm also in favor of charter schools for different subjects, for different disciplines. Not all children are going to college. Some are going to be tradesmen, some are going to be plumbers, electricians, bricklayers, truck drivers. I think we should reach out to the labor community and business community to bring them in to see if they can help mentor some of these students that aren't going to go on to college.
10 seconds.
Oh. One, two, three.
You're done.
Okay. So now just to start on the questions, and I'm going to throw the first one out to you. All of you will not be surprised that there are a number of questions relating to budget issues. Mm-hmm. The proposed budget cuts that the district is anticipating are going to hit talent and gifted services rather hard. The proposal is to cut two TAG staff, including the first ever African-American TAG teacher that we've had in the district. We're also proposing that of the remaining four staff members, two of them are going to be sort of farmed out to math and then to literacy. So that's going to leave two TAG staff members and an administrator for the entire district. And so our question for you is, do you believe that services for academically talented students still have a role in this district?
Yes, I do. There's two things that I find concerning about these cuts. One is that the TAG people that are in Doyle actually do a lot of direct student services. And when we talk about what parents want, one thing they want is no cuts to the classroom. And this is another time where we're supporting the teacher. They're in the classroom. They have direct contact with the kids. We do have leading people in the district in teaching and learning. In fact, we have 10 of them at Doyle. We also have 10 that are kind of out in the field. And so to go down that quickly over the course of a year because of budget cuts, I don't think is very wise. Second is that we need to get a better handle on how we view kids that are talented and gifted. It's a broad spectrum. It's not the special kids. And I think that we're not serving the poor kids and kids of color by doing this.
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. I believe in the talented and gifted program and the staff members, and I know they work very hard for this district. This is a direct result of the state-imposed revenue limits, and this is what we're going to have to live with from here on out until we make this change of how we fund school financing here. And so I want to encourage everyone that's in this room here to start lobbying our legislature and start letting them know that your kids count and your kids are very important. One thing that is very difficult in terms of doing any kind of budget reductions is, you know, this is hitting every department in this district, and it hits every department hard. But I do believe that if you're not going to go to referendum, then you have to do a different service delivery model. And I hope that it is effective for our young people, and if it's not, then we'll have to look at making a change.
These cuts will be very detrimental, especially when you put them together with the enlarging the class sizes at the elementary grades. Because if you're going to cut that kind of staff, you need to at least be able to have staff development for those elementary teachers so that they will be able to differentiate their materials and their curriculum for all of for the kids all the way across the spectrum. So the two together are very concerning, and I think that's something. I find it interesting that for special education, there is testing, there's evaluation that is specific, and there are criteria. But for TAG, there doesn't seem to be that. And I really would like to see for the TAG kids have some sort of more set criteria evaluation system, so that we can get those kids the services that they also need.
Yeah, I'd like a little accountability here. I'd like the superintendent to tell me if he thinks that four people are enough for talented and gifted program in the city, and why we are going to lose two. So that I first have to find out about and know about the sheer numbers. And is it going to affect any in-step programs that are going on? And so basically my belief is that every single child in this district has to be challenged, and that goes for talented, gifted, as well as any other child. And I will support any program that does that. As I've said throughout this campaign, the bottom line is, are we reaching the children? If we're not, then let's find out why we're not and do something about it. And that's how I will be on the board. I'll make those decisions based on that. But that would be my first question to the superintendent.
I think we should be expanding the TAG program, reaching out to the low-income minority students more. There's many low-income minority students that are very gifted that are we're not reaching. I think we should be out there trying to get more of them into the TAG program. And to do this, I think we also have to have an independent audit of the district's expenses. Where is all the money going? We're spending over $12,000 per student. What are we getting for that? And I think we need to see why the superintendent wants to make these cuts in the TAG program and not being expanding the TAG program for the students.
You guys are great. How is this going for you?
Love it.
Love everything.
So far, so good.
Keep it coming.
Yep.
Okay. Is there more?
Yeah, just me. Yeah. All right. Well, I have consensus here. We all agree the TAG program is great. So I think we all agree with that. And really, a big part of my campaign has been about maximizing achievement for all students. And
you know, I think it's imperative that we do that, and we really need to demand accountability from our district and how we're spending our money and make sure that we get results for the money we're spending. I too have said we really need to have an outside independent group evaluate our budget a little bit more closely. I not saying I don't trust everything that comes from administration, but sometimes I think a lot of the cuts are politically motivated, and I understand cuts have to be made, but I think we need to look at different service models and different ways of doing things. We need a different way. It's just not working what we're doing now.
Okay. So, Johnny, you get to start on this question. And the question is, what strategies or ideas do you have that can raise the academic success for all district students while avoiding pitting one group of parents against another?
Well, I think we got to look at value-added assessments. We need to look at what works well for every student, because I think everyone in this room knows that, you know, in education, it's not one size fits all. I think we can agree on that, and I think what works for some students may not work for other students. In terms of pitting people against each other, I just think that, you know, we just have to, I guess, look at it, all of us as individuals. We all have to put each other in different shoes and say, okay, Maya, I want to make sure that your kids do well in school. Rick, I want to make sure your kids do well in school. Tom, I want to make sure that you get the best investment on your taxpaying investment that you're going to make, because I know you're holding your wallet real tight. but in terms of that, I mean, we just have to make sure that we agree to disagree but not be disagreeable, and make sure that we
say it one more time, John.
Agree to disagree but not be disagreeable, and make sure that we're educating every student in this district to the best of their ability. You like that answer, Jeff? Is that right? Stay within the timeline. I mean, that's the most important thing the whole night here.
What?
Beth, I think it's up.
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, I'm losing time. Right, I really think that we need to, one of the things we need to do is change the climate in the schools by having higher expectations for all of our kids. And by doing that, then we are going to open up more access to AP TAG for the children in poverty, the children of color. And as far as pitting one group against another, I think that's a very dangerous road to go, because we all need to come together, because our schools are the vital part of our community. I mean, that's why a lot of people come here, and I always say they don't come for the weather. You know, they come here because the schools are good and because people know that their kids are going to get good education. The UW is a good university system. We want to keep that feeder going into the UW, and we don't want everybody rushing off and taking their kids out of the school system. As far as revenue goes, we have got to get more revenue into this school district. We really need to, as a school board, lobby the legislature, lobby the governor for more funds.
All right, you know, we're in a crisis. We're in a financial crisis, and we're just all going to have to compromise a little bit. And some of us are going to lose, and some of us are going to win in one place, and some of us are going to win, and some of us are going to lose in another place. And I think what we have to do is unite as a community now at a very, very difficult time. And everybody come together and realize that a house divided against itself is not going to work anymore. And this means that each of us will try to help the other people in this district with their needs. Whether that's being partnerships, whether that's donating money to Madison Foundations for Schools, whether that's tutoring after school, whether it's Schools of Hope, whether it's anything like that. If this community does not come together under this crisis, we're all going to lose. Every single one of our children are going to lose. And we can't do that, because the bottom line here is not just my child or your child, but all of our children in this together. And that's what we have to fight for. That's why we have to fight the revenue caps. That's why we have to find another means for funding our schools. And until then, we have to learn to work together.
I don't think we should be pitting one group of parents or one group of citizens against another. But in the years past, I think that's what has happened, especially because of what people see out there. People are voting with their feet. Their parents are moving, families are moving out of the district because, rightly or wrongly, they perceive that the school district is not teaching their children. Whether this is a right or a wrong perception, its reality is that they're moving out of the Madison School District. They're not moving into the school district. We have to look and see, okay, what can we do different? What are some new ideas? What are some new innovations that we can have to make people want to come into the district? And last, philosophically, I'm against the revenue caps, always have been. I think that local control is the best.
Well, good. Yeah, I think we're in agreement here. You know, none of us wants to see us pitting one group of students against another, and I think a lot of that comes down to how we do budgeting and how we do things, and it again, does seem to be political to me a lot of times. I understand things have to be done, but there is a different way. We need to be open to new ideas and different ways of doing things. Listen to students, listen to parents, listen to teachers. There's a lot of great ideas out there, and we need, again, I think it comes down to hopefully when we hire a new superintendent, we have a superintendent that's willing to listen to the public and willing to take suggestions for change, and that's what I would add to.
Well, I think in some ways, if you've been a parent and had kids in the district like I have long enough, you start to recognize the natural cycle that goes on. Last year, we had a long-term planning committee on the east side. They said they didn't want their schools consolidated. They didn't want them closed. They want to keep class sizes low. And lo and behold, the next thing you know, we come up on a budget cycle. We're going to close schools, consolidate, and increase class size. So this is a boat that isn't steering very well. And we need a board that's going to set a policy that says we want every kid to rise to their potential. And how do we do that? We write a policy that says something a little more than we want kids to attend, we want them to read at third grade level or above, and that we want them to take algebra. The rest of the school districts are reforming on a level that we're not doing fast enough, and we need to do it quicker. Finally, I think this comes down to that it's very reflective of our superintendent. It's worked for a while, but it's not going to work anymore.
Yeah, Carol? Is there anyone else out in the hallway?
No, I don't think so. Okay, so the first dibs at this question, which is, in thinking about your personality characteristics, what would you say is the most positive trait that you bring to the board, and which of your traits would be the most important?
Well, I think that I have a good sense of how to bring people together. I think that, you know, I really am a consensus builder, and I really do. I'm a good listener. You know, I intend to listen to everybody's opinions and try to help the board come to a consensus. And I think that my experience working on the CAST, the school financing referendum, with that group, really gave me a lot of good experience, and I felt really good about the way that I handled that situation. Negative. I think. Well, I get. Gosh. Okay, I'd say probably getting very maybe emotional and passionate about things. How's that? I think, you know, I feel very strongly about certain things. I feel very strongly about education, and I put my whole self into it, and maybe sometimes that's too much.
You know, sense of humor. And if it works in the classroom under very difficult circumstances, it's got to work on the school board. We were all going to agree to be disagreeably? Disagreeably?
Whatever.
I don't know, whatever. My worst fault is my lack of thereof sense of humor. No. I think I want things too quickly. I want so much for the children of the school district that it's very hard for me sometimes to go through the pieces to get there. I just want to go from here to there and let's get it done and quick and over. And I think you have to consult, you have to come to a consensus, you have to speak, you have to, you know, hear what other people have to say. And that's what I intend to do on the board.
Negative,
as Johnny says, I like to hang on to the money. I'm a tight one. I want to help for the district's money as if it was my own, because part of it is. Positive or negative. Also, I'm independent. I would come to the board with no preconceived ideas of what programs are right, what programs are wrong, what places where we should improve. I would listen to the parents, but for the students, listen to the teachers. They know best because they're in the trenches, so to speak, every day. We don't need to be micromanaging them, and neither does the superintendent or that. Let them have a free rein. They know what's best for the students 99% of the time.
I'll go with that.
All right. My greatest positive is that I'm innovative. I like to try new things. I'm willing to listen to people to hear what ideas they have. I don't have the answers to everything at all. I'd like to listen to people and come up with new ideas and work together with groups to figure out ways we can do things that I never would have thought of. And I was like, wow. You know, and it's amazing, like when I work with children at Memorial High School in the group, the kids come up with the most amazing ideas of how to do something. I never would have done it that way. But it works, and it's great. Probably my greatest negative is that I've been a business owner for so long as a small business owner that when I see something that needs to be done, I think it should just get done. You know, if I see a problem, I think it should be solved yesterday and not, you know, months from now or years from now. So sometimes working with the bureaucracy is going to be troubling for me. I can see that. It would be very challenging, but that would probably be my greatest negative.
Okay, this is going to be fun, and most of the time this isn't fun. My husband copied for me this afternoon two endorsements, one from the Wisconsin State Journal and one from the Capital Times, and I'm proud to say that I earned both of them. And so I'm going to let both of their editorial boards say what is good and bad about me. I think, if anything, I'm not your standard politician. I always run out of time. But I also am a great listener. I'm a very effective listener. I work with United Way. I work with YWCA, working on diversity and inclusiveness issues. And I think that I'm going to be in the schools for a long time. My kids are. And I have the fire in my belly, which is that I'm the demographic that we're so concerned of, the poor kid that doesn't have parent representation. And I know that it's difficult, and I'm not someone that's going to back down to an administration, to a teachers union, to taxpayers, to anybody, because I want what's best for the kids.
Me too, Maya. I want what's best for the kids, too. You know, but I tell you, this job is tough. When I say it's tough, it's hard to, there's different forces pulling at you at all times, whether that's the students, the parents, the community, Tom Brew clutching his wallet. There's a lot going on. And as a member of the school board, you have to listen to all that information, and then you have to make a decision. That's tough, because eventually you're going to make somebody angry. Sometimes that person could be your neighbor, that person could be your friend, that person could have given you money on the campaign trail. So that's tough, and I'm going to say that's a negative. The positive that I think I bring to the board is, as I said before, I think I agree to disagree but not be disagreeable. And I think that's what makes everything get better. Okay.
No. We move on.
Do you?
Question again.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so March gets to answer this one first. Can you please state clearly and simply your position on the educational approach of offering core courses delivered in completely heterogeneous classes? That is, no opportunity for self-selected ability grouping in the form of advanced TAG or honors classes. for our high school freshmen and sophomores. A really clear explanation of your views on this topic would be much appreciated.
Would you like that in 5,000 words or less? I'm the other one who didn't get the endorsements, so I just want to introduce myself to you and say that I think I've got the grassroots support, so let's go forward with the answer. I believe definitely in differentiating for talented and gifted children, and I believe in inclusion as well, and I think there should be a chance for students to test out of certain courses if they think they have the ability, if the parents think they have an ability to succeed. I also think there should be multiple texts within each classroom so that each child can have the text or the curriculum that's appropriate for their needs. There's a time for inclusion, there's a time for being together as a whole class, there's a time for separating out into what you can do in your abilities and do the projects and do the research and do the writing on your own. There's a time for working together, a time for working on your own, a time for partnerships, a time for advanced classes. I believe in all of that.
This means 15 seconds left.
That's all right. Yeah. That's all right.
Couldn't have said it better. I think that we should have more placement according to ability in classes, in subjects, so that students are learning with like-minded students, for lack of a better term, so that they're in math, the ones that catch on with math and are very good at math, put them together. The ones that are a little slower, that don't understand it, put them together. In English, the ones that know the English, put them together. People like myself that had no idea what the English was, put them in another group, because if you're in with somebody that is the same as you are, and learning at the same pace, you will learn, and you won't feel left out or bored. One of the two.
Okay. Well, I too believe in all kids being able to decide what they're going to do. By the time students reach high school, a lot of times they have a feeling of what their goals are. And I want to encourage all kids to challenge themselves. We want to set high expectations for all kids. And so I think that, absolutely, I think kids should have the opportunity. There should be options there for the students. Not every student's going to go on to college, but they should also be challenged. But we should also have other opportunities also for students that know they're not going to go on to college and have no interest in it. I'd like to see greater work with apprenticeship programs, different programs like that, but also for kids that know they're going on to college and really want to challenge themselves, we need to have those options available also. And while some of that can be done in the standard classroom, sometimes you just need to have other classes. You know, some children are just further ahead, and I took classes like that when I was in high school, and it served me very well. It helped me get done with college in a little over 3 years. I wouldn't be able to do that if it wasn't for AP courses. So I was a beneficiary of those programs.
My strategic plan would be to think about what we're going to be graduating our kids towards. So let's talk to MATC, let's talk to UW, let's talk to the trades, and figure out ways to connect kids once they get their high school diploma. As far as the core coursework, I'm uncomfortable with the fact that the superintendent has taken it upon himself to be the person that's going to speak for the entire community. The reason why I go out and talk to people, that I read a lot of research, I look at what other states are doing, is not because I'm trying to be the expert. I'm trying to get a sense of the context of what's going on in the state and in the nation. And we are not moving forward. We have a progressive curriculum, which includes a progressive reading and math and so forth, but let's use a physical symbol. If we have kids that are meeting this, and we have them two grades above and two grades below, we're expecting teachers now to do this. That's the classroom that we're asking them to manage, and it's not manageable.
Well, the lovely woman that just walked into the room here is my wife, Dr. Angela Byers Winston, who is an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin. The question was, dear, about differentiation and in terms of how that would work in the school district. And I think it depends on the course. I think in your math and science disciplines, I do believe you need advanced placement, you need TAG, you need honors courses in those disciplines. But directly, talking about West High School in 9 and 10, that's
been a very contentious issue, as I have read many of your emails. I think the school board, I think we have stated that we want to make sure that we look at the data at the end of the day. We do listen to the staff and we do take their input, but at the end of the day, we do need to look at the data to see if it does work, and if it does work, that's wonderful, and if it doesn't, we need to make the motion to look at some other options.
Well, I am a strong proponent of inclusion, and but I do feel like when you have, especially in the high school classes, the mixed ability classes, you have to be sure that all the students have the supports that they need. So the children who are learning on kind of the lower end of the spectrum need those special education supports. And the teacher also needs to have the staff development and the support from other teachers and from district coordinators, I guess, so that they can have help differentiating that curriculum for those students. I took a look at the West 10 English syllabus, and it looks to me it looks very appropriate for sophomores of many different levels and or many different ability levels. And I think that for a class like that, that a teacher could differentiate that without too much difficulty, provided that they do have that special education support.
Tom, you get to answer this one first. I'm going to try and summarize several different questions because they're all sort of getting at the same idea. It's something that you've mentioned. Well, everyone sort of mentioned. The question deals with how do we go about doing a better job of identification of academically high-ability students, particularly students from underrepresented populations, poor minority populations that don't typically end up in what we think of as high-end classes. But so how do we sort of do a better job of identifying kids, and if you want to talk some about what giftedness is, in your answer, people would love to hear that too.
Well, for the minority and low-income students, I think we have to reach out to the minority people, the leaders in the community, because they can identify these gifted students. The black churches, the 1,000 or 100 black men here in Madison, different organizations, Madison Urban League would be one. Also, in the school, the teachers, they know which students are academically gifted after a while in their class. Most teachers can see this. We have to look at the experts. I don't know if I could go into a classroom and say, well, you're gifted, you're not, whatever. That would be more the teacher or somebody from the community that knows the person.
Okay. Well, that's a very difficult question to know. How are you going to be able to do that? I would tend to think I would like to see students, I've been talking about that, is trying to maximize the achievement for all students. We need to know whether or not our programs are working in our district. I would like to see a way that we could evaluate students at the beginning of the year and at the end of the year, every year, of all grade levels. I think that would be a great way to do that, and also be a great way to hold our district accountable for the results we're having. Beyond that, I guess I'd like to hear from groups that what they think would be most useful, and I'd listen to those suggestions and make a decision based on that.
Okay, I'm going to give a plug for providing preschool education in 4K. I think that issue is going to come up in the next year or so. There's a grassroots movement for us to provide that, and it does affect whether a kid is ready, kindergarten ready. I think a lot of it comes down to cultural competency. We need to continually train our teachers in that issue. We're expecting teachers to take on a lot, and we did have an expert come in, but he came and went, and you don't learn cultural competency in a 48-hour flash-in-the-pan test. I also think that we need to partner more with parents. What works for the Latino community is different than what works for the Hmong community, what works different for African American community. And a lot of parents don't feel welcome in this. And then finally, high expectations. Every kid should be considered that they're going to achieve.
Carol, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Your hard work and effort. This lady that's making it happen at Wickedy. As I said before, I think you could talk about your challenges all day long. Eventually, you have to start doing something about it. And I'm glad to say that our school board has become a leader, and everyone has decided that we need to partner with Wickedy to make sure these things happen. I met Dot McDonald, who was a student at West High School, at the Wickedy breakfast, and it was wonderful. And she says, and I asked her, so well, why are you here? Because we're the only African-Americans that were there. So why are you here? And she's asking me, why are you here? And I, was like, and, I said, well, how did you get here? She said, well, they tested me at the Boys and Girls Club. They tested you at the Boys and Girls Club? She goes, yeah, they came over, they gave me some tests, and now I'm in advanced placement courses at West High School. It's not traditional. And I think those are the kinds of things we've got to mind for those beautiful students that are out there that might not get that opportunity. We also got to keep pressing on with our staff and keep supporting their efforts, and I think we'll get more students of color involved and talented to get to advanced placement courses.
Well, like I was saying before, it's interesting that you have, for special education, you have criteria, you have evaluations periodically. So I think for the talented and gifted kids, you know, we need the same thing for them too. They, you know, they deserve to be evaluated and then to have those services that they require. And I believe that there's a group of parents who's actually working on a criteria right now. I think I've heard that, which I think is a wonderful way to go. And as far as the kids who are at risk, I would propose that for children starting in elementary school, that we identify a member of staff who can follow that child, get to know the family, follow the child, go through elementary school, follow that child through the difficult transitions, and get to know the family and encourage that student. And so if that student does show that they have the ability to move into the advanced placement and TAG program, then they can recommend that.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. It's useful. Every teacher, when she looks out at her class on day one, looks out at every child for their uniqueness and what they have to offer. And she or he sets expectations for that child. So if that child comes in here, you expect that child to go there or there. If a child's here, you expect the child to go there, and you set it and make sure that child reaches those goals. It's hard. It's difficult. It means you individualize for each child. It means you're there for each child. And it means that some nights you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and saying, I didn't get to that kid today. Why didn't I? I wish I had. Teachers can identify, all teachers can identify the children in front of them that need extra help. If they can't, then they ought to be trained and developed. And they ought to get that staff development, or they ought to be leaving the classroom. That's the basic right. Now here's something else too. We're assuming automatically here that certain people of color or certain cultural groups in our city are not producing talented and gifted kids, and that we have to really reach out to find them. They're there. They're in the classroom every day, and teachers see them every day. And it has nothing to do with their color or their culture. And you approach every child the same way you approach, and every parent you approach the same way. And that's what you, how you bring them into the classroom, and you help develop a program for their particular child.
Rick, a budget question. Would you, as a school board member, support a referendum to deal with the shortfall that the district is currently facing? For example, Carol Carstensen's version of a referendum.
At this time, no, I would not support the referendum. From my reading, I don't necessarily, being not on the board, I'm not privy to all the information about some of the negotiations that are going on with unions and stuff, and that's fine. I understand why I'm not privy to it. But it is hard to make a decision, an intelligent decision, without having that information. But that being said, at this time, I know that when you borrow, for example, $5 million, for every $1 million you borrow, you have to, essentially, you give up $1.6 million. So you actually have to borrow go more above than what it would be. So it's not a good use of our money, in my opinion, at this time. So no, I would not be in favor of a referendum.
I also would not be in favor of a referendum. Like I said before, it's really disconcerting that we had this long-term planning process, and now we're doing exactly what we were told that the public didn't want. Furthermore, there are programs that the board looked at, and I would like them to look at them closer. One is REACH, which is in the elementary schools. It's $1.4 million. If we cut that in half, that would take care of all the consolidation closing issues, I believe. And also, finally, referendums are very difficult and time-consuming to explain to the general public. It's not $100 of taxpayers' money. It's $100, and then the next year it's $200, and the following years it's $300, and then it stays at $300 for the end of time. And one thing we need to do as a district is have that long-term plan and have the community support. So we need to gain the support of the 70% of folks that don't have kids in the schools.
I believe this community cares about its young people. I believe it cares about its school district. But at this point in time, I do not believe that it will support an operating referendum for several reasons. But just know that there will be referendums in the future. Okay? Just know that. On Monday night, we will discuss Carol Carstensen's her proposal. I will not be in support of that. At the same time, we will be working as a board on developing the groundwork for a referendum in the future that will look at the possibilities and the investment that this community needs to make in its public school system.
Okay. Yeah, I also, at this time, would not support a referendum for the operating expenses for this next upcoming year. After working with CAST last fall, and that was for a new school that was also taking four operating expenses, I realized the effort that it takes. It was a huge undertaking to educate the entire community as to the importance of that referendum. And I think that, you know, we can either look at it as, wow, we've got all that momentum, so shouldn't we do it again? But I worry that we had all that momentum, so we need to give people a break. And maybe let's see what these cuts are actually going to, what's really going to happen. Because I also, if we decide to have a referendum now and it fails, it will be doubly difficult to pass another one next year. And that's really why I would vote against it.
I guess I'm the only one here that supports it. And I support it so we don't have to close schools. I support it so we can keep all those programs that are sort of the icing on the cake of education. Which includes strings, which includes tax programs and tag resource people. And I think it would give us a cushion for 3 years so that in that time we can get together as a community and get those revenue caps revoked. And we can still keep the essentials of a very strong program in our district going. And let me tell you about taxes. I'm just going to give you an example here. In 1994, a house was valued at $134,000. In 2004, it was valued at $202,400. The valuation of the house went up 51%. The change in school tax went down 20%. The change in valuation went up $68,000. The change in school tax was actually $530 less from 1994 to 2004. I think this district can do something for these schools.
Like Rick, I'm not privy to the what the financial the negotiations and understand that should be in confidence. But I would not support a referendum at this time. And I would not support a referendum until we have an independent audit of the whole budget to see what programs are working, what aren't, where the money's going, where we could save some money. And if it's found that we're spending everything the best, the most economically way, best way that we can, then we would have to go to referendum.
Um,
recently we created the African-centered pedagogy project at West High School. One main part of it is the Black Man's Class for Credit Towards Graduation. It includes 20 black men mentors from the community. As a school board member, would you support, if necessary, with funds, this class? Would you be a leader in supporting African-centered pedagogy classes for all Madison high schools?
Well, if Tina Jenkins talks to me again, then yes, of course I would. Of course I would. I've heard it's a great program, and the stuff that she's doing in that classroom is pretty intense. And we need more of that. We need more of that, though, on every level. We need, you know, the board can be have a very good oversight role. But we're really not the experts, and you learn that after running for school board twice. There are so many experts out in the community that can help us with this. And when I've gone and talked to African-American leaders, they say, why aren't we involving the church? Why aren't we giving the message to the community? It's very communal, and that means that, you know, of course I'm going to work with her and others, but it does come down to training teachers about cultural competency. And we need to have more mentors, more role models that reflect our student population.
Just to piggyback on what you said, if Tina Jenkins yells at me one more time, we got to make sure we do this program. I agree wholeheartedly. Jenkins, and she has worked tirelessly for this class. You know I support your efforts wholeheartedly. We got to get you some money somewhere, somehow. I don't know if it'll be within the school district, but there are foundations, there are grants, United Way is out there, and it'd be really important to have the school board writing a letter on your behalf in order to get some people excited about your program, because I know it will help a lot of kids. So I'm supportive of that effort, and we'll work very hard to make sure that you're successful and all those students are successful.
Well, I support this project. I think that the importance of mentors cannot be diminished. I was a Schools of Hope tutor and could see the difference in the child that I helped, you know, with just a basic project from start to finish. That's something that she had never really been able to accomplish. Like Johnny, I don't know how much money it costs. You know, I don't know. I haven't seen that line item on the budget. So
Tina is expensive.
Is it? Yeah. Well, you know, but you have to look at what are the results of that. I mean, is it money that's well spent, and is that, you know, how many kids is that going to mean that they're going to stay in school and that they're going to go on to great things, you know, in the community and give back to our community. So I would need to find out more about it, but it sounds just like something that we need more of those types of projects, and we do need more money to fund them.
Yeah, my concern is, why didn't this happen before? We know what the graduation rates of African males are. They're abysmal. We know the fact that we're not getting them through high school. We know they're not getting the jobs out there. Why wasn't this started before? And now we have to beg, borrow, and steal money to give this to programs like that. And again, if we only had the resources we needed, you know, we wouldn't have to be scrounging out there for other people to supply money for these courses. We'd have them ourselves. And so, of course, we have to do more. And I believe next year you're going to extend it into African-American females, I believe.
We're looking to do that, if
we get the money. Which is equally disturbing to me, frankly, what happens to minority females in our district. So, yes, I completely support it. I will do everything in my power to get money for it when I'm on the board. And, yes, let's keep going with this.
Not only do I support it, I think that it should be fully funded, and not just at one school, but at all the schools. The school board should be looking to find the money with a 300-some million dollar budget. They ought to be able to find the money, because this is a program that is producing results. And that's what we're looking for as a board, as a community, as parents, as taxpayers. We're looking for results. And this is one program that is fantastic. It's producing the results. And it should be expanded, quite frankly, to all the schools, and to not only just the males, but to the females also.
All right. Well, again, I think we're all in agreement. I think it sounds like a great program.
We bring out the best in you guys.
Yeah, we are. You know, we agree to be agreeable.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it shows the kind of innovation that we need in the school district and the kind of things that we need. We need to think outside the standard way of doing things and look at different alternatives and look to the community for solutions and ideas. And so, yes, I strongly support the program, and I also would agree that we need to expand it to the other schools also.
So, Johnny, where do you see MTI's advocacy for the needs of teachers coming into the most conflict or in the greatest tension with the needs of our district students?
Read that again.
Where do you see MTI's advocacy for the needs of teachers coming into the most conflict or in the greatest tension with the needs of our district students?
Well, just for full disclosure, I am a member of Local 311, which is the firefighters union here in Madison. So I'm very familiar with union and union roles. I think probably the biggest conflict is accountability, quite frankly. When we have a teacher who is struggling and maybe not doing what they need to do, and we give that person supports and give that person mentorship, and it's still not working, and then when it's time to maybe say get another profession, I think that's probably the biggest issue. I have not presided over a teacher dismissal. One is coming, but that's probably the biggest conflict. I mean, someone's not doing the job, you have to be able to move them on to something else.
Hey, well, I think that, you know, what the union does give us are experienced teachers who want to stay in the teaching profession, and I think that's very, very important, especially when we're looking at cutting the budget and cutting curriculum materials, cutting staff development. We have to hang on to our experienced teachers so that they can mentor the younger teachers and so that they can teach our kids the most effectively. They can differentiate that curriculum that they're familiar with. As far as conflicts, I think there is a conflict with something like a leave. I know that from a personal experience, just the inability of getting like a long-term sub, something like that. But I think that that's part of a larger negotiation, and that's part of something that keeps the teachers wanting to stay with our district, and I think that that is the strength of their contract. So I really...
I agree with Johnny. When a parent comes up to me and says, tells me some nightmare story about a child and a teacher, it devastates me because this is my profession and I want to be proud of my profession. And you know and I know that there are bad doctors out there and good doctors and bad dentists and good dentists. And unfortunately, there are bad teachers out there. And this is awful, and they shouldn't be, especially when they're dealing with children. Children should not have anything bad around them at all. We should protect them and take care of them to the best of our ability. So that does disturb me too, and I think we should look into it. But why are we predicting a conflict? Why does there have to be a conflict? You know, when you go into negotiations, there's a union and there's an administration, and you go in and you discuss things. Why does there have to be a conflict? That's what unions are all about, people. Negotiation.
I think, again, we're probably all in agreement. I don't think it's a conflict. I think it's a difference of opinion. When there's a bad teacher out there, and there are bad teachers, and trying to, after helping them, like Johnny said, doing everything possible, then asking them to get another profession. Well, it's the union's job to go to the mat for the teacher. And I think this is where the conflict comes in, because the union is always going to stand feels that they always have to stand up for the teacher. I think this is where we have to change the culture and talk with the union and the union president and the union board of directors and say, hey, not all your teachers should be teachers. And how can we make it so that it's easier to get rid of a bad apple, so to speak? That will make the administration look good and make the union look good.
I do think probably the biggest problem is accountability. You know, I've been a business owner for a lot of years, and I've had to hire staff and fire staff, and it was very easy for me to reward employees that were doing well. And if they came with me with new ideas, hey, I could reward them, I could promote them. Things were done, and a lot of times, unfortunately, sometimes if an employee was doing a really bad job, you tried to help them. It's expensive to, you don't want turnover, but sometimes things just have to be done. And so I guess that's probably where I would see the greatest. If you want to call it a conflict, you can call it that, but is making sure that we have quality teachers and finding a way to reward good teachers. But then also, if you do the training, obviously it's expensive to hire new teachers and new employees, so you have to work with the ones you have, but at some point you do just have to say, hey, maybe you do need a different job. So that's probably the greatest area.
Okay, I'm going to go on a different tangent. Are you ready? Reality and perception. Reality is that there's always going to be this tension between teachers and students. There's tension between parents and kids. I actually think we ask too much of our teachers. We live in a society where we ask them to do so much and then be accountable for it. I think we're looking at it in a different way. And I'd like to go back to one example of reality, which is last year, a couple years ago, we had an issue with lunchroom time. And the parents see their kids in their winter coats eating lunch, and we went to the union, and we did negotiations, and the teachers wanted, they would not do it, and it was going to add, I believe, 5 minutes to their workday. Now, perception of the general public is, my God, 5 minutes. But I volunteer in the schools, and I do it for many long hours, and I've cleaned up after the kids. 5 minutes is a long time in the lunchroom. Okay? So what we need to do is board, darn. Yeah. Oh. I'm going to wait till the black. Okay. What we need to do is be very clear of where we're going to and partner with the teachers and the administration.
Run, Maya, run.
You're
in first. All right. Okay. This unfortunately is going to be the last question, even though there are people who would love to stay all night. Questions. This is a question, and Beth, you could answer this first. What position or talent most distinguishes you from your opponent?
I would say that my talent of drawing consensus. I think that just working with people and getting people excited about things and getting people to talk to one another, getting unification. I've been I'm a really great listener. I've been out to many schools, talked to staff, parents, and trying to figure out, how we can make this district a better place. And I see this district as an asset to this community, and I see it as something that we need to keep strong. And, I came here because of the schools. I know there are a lot of people who do that as well. And I see this as something that we need to continue to support. We need to continue to grow our district. And challenge all of our students. I also have a child who has special needs, and I think that...
I'm sorry. No, I forgot I had that.
I'm
sorry. I don't admit, this is the most fun forum. I mean, you've laughed more.
You should have seen us. We were posing for a photograph.
Anyway, I have a child with special needs, and I think I've been coming from the perspective of a parent who's been advocating for a child since birth, and I intend to advocate for all children in our district.
I've taught high school. I've taught first grade. third grade, fourth grade, 4, 5, 5, combined LD regular ed classroom. I've taught seventh grade, I've taught computers. I come with this wide knowledge of almost every level in education. I bring the realities of what the classroom is like. This is what I bring. It's my experience, and it's my knowledge, and it's my skill to work with children at all different levels, all different abilities. And in my life, I've been very, very proud of the fact that I had my staff nominate me for a Distinguished Teacher Award in Madison Schools. I had 100 students sign a letter for me to get the Golden Apple Award or some Crystal Apple Award from NBC. I have a Teacher of Teachers Award from the university. It's pretty hard to come up with something in some event and some horrible fact, too, about education that I haven't confronted in all of my 28 years of experience in New York, inner city New York, if you haven't learned to that already about my accent, and about Madison for the last 37 years.
I think both Johnny and myself both want what's best for the students. We want to see what's best for them. I have a different vision of the school than my opponent. I'm coming at it looking at different ideas. I'm for keeping the school on the east side open. I'm for more charter schools. I'm also for an independent audit of the budget that what is out there right now. I'm also have gone through the Madison Public Schools. My three children did over a 20-year period. And I'm also want to represent. I want to be an independent candidate, be able to listen to everybody, to make judgments. What's best for the students, not for one group of people or one political persuasion or that.
All right. Beth is a great person. I've enjoyed campaigning with her, and she's been great to work with, and she is very dedicated to students as I am. Probably the greatest difference, I guess I feel, is maybe my experience being responsible as a business owner to have to respond to my customers and to come up with new ways of doing things and, you know, just constantly having to innovate that way. And so you don't survive in business unless you're willing to listen to your customers and really listen to them, because if they don't like what you do, they just don't come back. And they don't always tell you why they don't come back. They just don't. And so you need to be innovative, you need to do things, and you need to really concentrate on what their needs are. So I feel by having that experience and also having to have made the hard decisions that every business owner has to make about budgeting, about hiring and firing employees, and about what's a priority and what isn't a priority, I think those are probably the greatest differences between myself and them.
I think one of the best things I have going for me is that I'm a pragmatic dreamer. Took me a while to come up with that. I've also been called a closet conservative and just today a liberal insurgent, so go figure. Labels are labels. I know about the tension of competing needs. I nursed twins with a 2.5-year-old by my side for over a year. This is something that I live and breathe. It's something that mothers don't get enough credit for, the amount of time and energy it takes to raise kids. Just like teachers. I have a broad knowledge and experience. I worked at a zoo where we were in crisis and we had budgets. And at the same time, we had a very important group of animals, just like we have a very important student population. And we're in this competing budget, and we need to always remind ourselves that the students are the most important thing. Finally, I'm like a kid in the candy store. I have gotten farther than I would ever want to get to, and I'm looking for that black paper. And we have so much potential in this community, we just have to tap it.
I love this job. I do. My wife will tell you that I'm passionate about being on the school board and serving. It's been an honor. No matter what happens on April 3rd, this has been the best thing that has ever happened to me. No disrespect to the fire department, but working with people, serving people, has absolutely been the greatest thing. I think I bring strong leadership to the Madison School Board. I'll help Mark Eisen sell more advertising for the isthmus. I help school info systems get more hits on their website. And I work with each and every one of you to make sure that your voice is heard, make sure that you're listened to. I'll do the best job that I can to educate each one of your students. And I'll vote with all that in mind. Thank you for having me serve. It's been a wonderful experience.
And now,